Because of the following special program, Wonder Woman and the Incredible Hulk will not be presented this evening.
Hello, my media masochists, and welcome to another installment of our anime quarantine miniseries here on the worst show on Earth. I'm Matt Murphy, and I'm a weeb in recovery, and recovery never ends. With me, as always, is that marvelous anime maven, Alex Humphrey.
I'm not in recovery. I can quit anime anytime I want. I choose to continue. I'm in control.
Time was we actually both liked anime.
Listen, one can't talk about liking anime as a whole. But it has to be specific when liking anime.
No, what are you talking about? This is a monolithic thing that all descriptions must apply to all examples
of. Matt, if there's anything anime quarantine has taught us, it's that claiming you like all of anime makes you scum. Oh, God. I'm sorry.
So you heard it first, weebs. You're scum. We also want to address one more thing, which is our unofficial mascot, Cricket-chan. Cricket-chan lives here at Grave House, and we can't find her or kill her. So she's just going to be on the recording from now on, guys. Deal with it.
Kawaii, Cricket-chan.
If you want to send fan art of Cricket-chan, please email worstshowonearth@gmail.com. Anyway, we all feel like we've been transported to another world of late. So to prevent us from murdering each other, we're watching horrendous anime to get mad at them instead, despite our oaths to the contrary. This time, we bit into a genre that's run rampant in anime, that of isekai, which roughly translates to another world in English. In the West, this is often referred to as portal fiction, involving a character getting sent to another world, a la Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz, Alice in Wonderland, or those damn British kids in The Chronicles of Narnia.
It's hardly a new concept in fiction.
No, not at all. It's been around for a long, long time. Children being kidnapped by fairies is similar to this.
And like, oh, yeah.
Having a fun adventure in the fairy kingdom and then coming back and things are different.
It's really no different from like Hansel and Gretel going into the woods. It's a travel into the unknown, except now in the modern era, when we really so much is known, we have to create our own unknowns and maybe, you know, rip off MMO games while we're at it.
Yeah, for some reason, a lot of these isekai focus on fantasy worlds. Other worlds could certainly be, like, a sci-fi world is possible, where you get, you know, Last Starfighter style, where you get sucked up and have to go fight Gundams in space or whatever.
Recently, anime has seen a glut of transported into video game isekai. It was kicked off kind of by Sword Art Online, which was a very popular anime, which is on its, like, fourth season now.
Fourth, like, series or something.
Yeah, because it's a different game every series.
Oh, God, a different game every series?
Different enough. I don't watch it, but that's what I gather. In fairness, some of my favorite anime growing up was isekai anime, though.
Like Inuyasha?
I watched every episode.
No shit, really?
Yeah, absolutely.
I had no idea.
I would sneak down for Adult Swim every night, creep past my sleeping parents to waste my childhood being exhausted because I watched TV at 1 a.m.
Oh, Kagome.
There is also Escaflowne.
Oh, I do forget Escaflowne is another isekai. Yeah,
it's transported to a fantasy world, but that fantasy world has thought put into it.
Yeah, and for that matter, another trope of these things is that, of this genre, is that the transported character uses their modern know-how or skills to gain special leverage.
Yes.
Or they have some sort of something that puts them up above that makes them unique among the rest of the denizens of the world.
Like being max level when everyone is level one.
Yes. Sometimes that's literal, but sometimes it's figurative. Sometimes they're also reincarnated. So like they die and they become someone new in this world. But they have memories, usually, of who they were before and have goals, and they're striving for that.
So I would say it's fair to say our first show was not a show with goals.
It was very meandering. Spirited Away is another famous isekai.
Absolutely.
She gets transported to the fairy world.
I think it's worth separating isekai from fairy abduction stories conceptually.
Because
generally speaking, isekai are kind of a character power fantasy.
And oh boy, is our second fair a lot like that. We watched two shows, as we usually do. The first one was called Seven Senses of the Reunion. The second show was called The Master of Ragnarok and Blesser of Einherjar.
And can I ask a question about that second one?
Of course.
So he's the Master of Ragnarok and Einherjar. So those are Norse things,
the
right?
Blesser of Einherjar. Yeah. Yes.
Why is it in Mesopotamia?
Was it in Mesopotamia?
It looked like it was clearly a
it was the
warm
Bronze
climate.
Age.
Yeah, but it was a warm climate.
Uh-huh.
And the sort of climate where the buildings were just open air. Like, it was not a northern Scandinavian climate.
It's a great question.
Anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. Yeah.
There's that special phrase again. But yes, the Seven Senses of the Reunion. I'm pronouncing that special because there's an apostrophe in there. And you have to pronounce things the way they're supposed to be pronounced. Let me give you guys the Amazon description of the show. We watched it. It's available on Amazon Prime. Here is what Amazon tries to sell it. I'm going to read it verbatim, just to warn you. Asahi's life in reality ended simultaneously when she died playing Union, a world-renowned online RPG. The members of Subaru went separate ways when Union shut down due to Asahi's death. 6 years later, Haruto logs into a renewed version of Reunion and reunites with Asahi, who had died. Is she an electronic ghost? The promise the childhood friends made will unfold within the game.
That pretty much summarizes the first episode. better than I could have hoped to.
Beat for beat, and in broken English, no less.
I'm not going to blame the person who wrote that for putting as little effort into writing the description of the show as possible. As little effort as possible went into every aspect of the show.
I don't know. I am always a sucker for these young love shows for some reason.
Is that what this was?
Of course. They're going to start fighting over this child. Okay, we should... Yes, yeah, so... Asahi, the girl who dies in both real life and the game because her heart died. She had heart failure.
She was like a childhood member of their clan who are the best, most famous players of this game called Union.
Yeah.
Who are so famous that everyone talks about them and they're that cool and better.
Yeah. They were in fact exposited by these dull intro characters.
The first 5 minutes are just three
randos.
Random characters talking about them.
Yes. Intercutting with their battle with a Mechagidra.
Yeah, it's like a three-headed dragon.
I thought I was really excited for Mechagidra. I was like, ooh, it's a good fight. It's a good monster. It's going to be interesting.
But a good fight would require animating said fight.
Right. Why would you do that when you can just talk about what they're doing?
And cut to still images with flashing backgrounds.
Now, I don't know if they did that in that first fight. But definitely later in the show, they resort to that.
It is minimally animated.
Yes.
And anime is already minimally animated. That's how they get away with it. Doing a lot of focusing on just the mouth moving or flashing colors in the background. Yeah. That's a cost-saving measure.
Mm.
This is to the next level.
They really went out of their way to not draw anything. If they could get away with a blank background, they did. We ended up watching two episodes of this show.
That's because the first episode barely got through its premise.
Yes.
It meandered desperately through its premise.
It took well over the first half for Asahi to die. And as your inciting incident, you want to get, like, you'd think that would start sooner, but I guess we have to set up all the childhood romance for, like, oh, I have a crush on this boy, but that boy has a crush on this girl, and then nah.
But they're, like, 8 at the time.
Yeah, they're at most 8 years old. I was convinced that we would never see their real-life personas for a good long while.
But apparently they feature heavily in the rest of the show.
And what's very strange... Oh, God. Oh, no. You're going to hate me for this.
All right.
So the children have, like, teenager avatars in this game of Union. The story picks up 6 years later when, like, the reboot of Union, Reunion, comes on. And when they log back in, they look at that age, they look exactly like their digital avatar.
This is something that peeved me while we watched it. And it's really common in these MMO animes. The characters just look exactly like their avatars.
Which is...
in what world?
It defeats the whole purpose of making an avatar.
This is what irked me most about this show. It made no effort to be in a video game. It had no consistent world. Some of the characters' powers included seeing the actual real future that was coming.
Now,
like,
granted,
the real future.
Granted, that was the specially revived from the dead girl, but she had that power before that happened.
There's another character who can read minds.
Which is apparently a standard ability in this world.
Is that what those helmets, because they have like VR helmets that they wear them bodily in. Do those read all your thoughts?
Let's talk about the actual interface of this game. This was something I was very hung up on. Because the game is a fully immersive VR thing. Which involves like you reaching out, like you can touch people and things and shit. And like move your arms around and shit. But the only way you can play it is by putting a cool-looking VR helmet on your head. And it just has, like, a microphone.
Oh, but you can't just play it with a VR helmet, Matt. You have to have a sense.
You do? Okay.
Only special people can play this video game.
Now, this is not the first video game. It's the second, the new video game. In Reunion, you have to have the sense. And how do you detect if someone has sense, Alex?
It's like... option number 3 in the menu when you sign in. It's just like signing in. Yep, you got sense.
Wow.
People have to have senses, right? And it's like the special trait that the human being playing the game has to have.
Mm. Apparently.
But it's also the power your character has in the world.
Yes.
So do these people have these powers in real life?
God, no. That can't be it, right?
But it doesn't make sense otherwise. Let's dig into the plot a bit here.
Yeah, let's talk more about what happened. So, like, the 6 or 7 of them are the most strongestest players in all the land. They hear about a new dungeon after they defeat Mechagidra. They hear about a new dungeon and they want to go to it. But before they have to do that, they start prepping. They give each other promise rings.
Oh, yeah, that scene. Because there's this scene, and this is another fault of this show. There's this scene between Asahi, the girl who dies, and what's his name?
Hotamu?
Hotaro?
It sounded like Naruto, but with an H.
Oh, Hokuto.
Hotaro. The boy.
And they have like a scene where she like gives him a ring, but it's all silent.
Yes.
You just hear like wind noises and you can't hear the words they're saying. And it's all in slow motion. There's another character watching.
Yes.
But this is in the first 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So it has no impact whatsoever.
Yeah, like we don't know what the promise is supposed to be. Like it all seems very innocent. It's clear that some of these people have crushes on others.
Mm-hmm.
And this, I think we're supposed to feel that we're getting a sense of betrayal from this promise, even though we don't know these characters
well
enough to really understand.
Mage girl has like a crush on our main character.
Yeah.
Because certainly everyone's going to have a crush on our main character.
No.
That's how these work.
Just Asahi. No, because Glasses Girl has a crush on Glasses Boy.
We'll see.
So they go to the new dungeon and they fight a guy that looks like a Cull Obsidian from Avengers ripoff.
Avengers. Oh, yeah. And he fights with flying swords, and then Asahi dies.
She dies. And then dies again. And it's so bad that they shut down the game.
Yeah, right. She dies. And they admit, like, they're like, she just died from a heart attack at the same time as she died in the game. Pure chance. But they shut down the whole game.
Then dead. 6 years later, Boy gets roped back into Reunion. And in the very first dungeon he goes to...
He fights her in a box. So this is another trope. I hate this trope. It's the girl in a box trope.
Oh, yeah.
Where your main character stumbles across a girl in a box. This show did it. Outlaw Star has it.
Very famously.
It's everywhere.
Firefly.
Hell, even Firefly has it.
Those are the big examples.
But it's just so...
Objectifying?
It's so male order bride.
Ugh, yes.
Girlfriend in a box. What more could you want?
So Asahi, the girl who died, she's still the 8-year-old. Meanwhile, everyone else is pubescent.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. This is the other thing that I wanted to tell you about. The thing that I think you're going to hate me for.
Give it to me.
So like I said, their avatars look like them when they're older.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone has looks very similar, except for Mage Girl. Because Mage Girl, when she grows up, her boobs are even bigger than her avatars.
No, no, it's just the outfit on the avatar.
You think so?
Yeah, absolutely. I was making that note myself.
Oh.
No, no, no effort was done into changing the characters at all.
It would have been nice if she had like a smaller set of boobs in the game or something. That would have been like a character trope.
Nice.
No, what am I saying? It doesn't, no, it's just
anime
boobs.
Has
it's
broken
just
you.
Boobs.
It's corrupted it's your just mind.
Boobs are not character traits, Matt. Oh, God.
To this show's credit, no panty shots.
This was a surprisingly innocent show.
Yeah, it was not that actually was in the least.
That's the thing I think that made it bearable, is that all the character designs, I did find them achingly adorable. I loved them all. I wanted to give them all the kisses. But
everything else about the show is crap.
Everything else is dull and boring.
The character designs are boring. The backgrounds are boring. The soundtrack is obnoxious.
We watched two episodes and we learned nothing about the game world itself.
We know there are menus.
There are menus.
They can bring up menus and it fits with the menus in front of them all the time.
The menus that they can summon. Oh, there is a thrilling scene of menu screen bureaucracy where they try to report the fact that a dead girl is in their game.
And our main character accepts that he's talking to a ghost really fast. And you're like, okay,
are you talking? It takes him at least a week because the episode airs every week.
But then his glasses friend shows up in episode two, and he immediately is cool with this concept.
Yes.
He's like, yeah, no, that's totally her. She's alive in the game. I can see that. Which doesn't make it. It's an avatar. Anyone can be piloting an avatar. That's not how digital characters work.
But she remembered things that only Asahi could remember.
But not in front of glasses guy. She didn't say anything to
me. Here's my theory about glasses guy. I think glasses guy is crazy. He has built up his own guild in Reunion, which has been open for like a week.
Yeah,
we don't know.
Reunion is brand new.
Reunion is brand fucking new. And there are people who are level a billion.
Protagonist was reset, but no one else in his guild. So every time one of the other characters shows up, They're
totally OP.
They're grotesquely overpowered.
So glasses guy has started a whole new guild. He's called it Illuminati, and he can just summon mooks and stab people.
I think they're real people, though.
I couldn't tell because they don't have faces. How can you tell?
I mean,
think it is implied that that's his guild, though.
Certainly, yes. I understand. When I play an MMO, I go in to make a very generic, faceless, masked character.
Of course.
And join an organization where I won't stand out.
Oh, yeah. Like a good salary, man.
Yeah, that's what I want out of my wish fulfillment.
So now we're deep into the second episode, which, by the way, is called Untold Feelings.
This is the episode where everyone has this obsession with capturing Asahi because she can see the future, which, again, it's a video game, right?
It's a video game.
You can't kidnap someone in a video game. They just log out.
Well, she can't.
But no one knows that.
Of course not.
Again,
how could they?
And additionally, I think we encounter three monsters in the course of this thing. It's supposed to be in a video game. Every other opponent is people.
Literally three. So let's go through them right now. We had Mechagidra in the beginning. We had Cull Obsidian Revav.
And then we have garbage bats.
We have some garbage bats because in Boy's first new dungeon experience, he fights two bats. And they look like flying carpets with dumb faces. They look kind of like kites.
Because he gets pulled back into the game because he doesn't play the game anymore. Because his friend died. Mope. Emo.
Well, he was blamed for the death by Glasses Guy. Glasses Guy is like, you killed her because she died saving Boy.
I can kind of give it to them that they were 8 and 8-year-olds blame each other for dumb shit.
I think Glasses Guy is obsessed with Asahi. He's like crazy obsessed with her.
But everyone else in the world is also obsessed with Asahi.
Well, they all want to use her for her power, but he's got
how
the
do they
crazy,
know she exists?
The rumors about her death were false, Alex.
Okay, this is where the show really falls apart. This is the biggest failing for the show, as far as I'm concerned. The show is nothing but a string of tropes thrust inexpertly in a line. Every single scene in the show is just from another show. Every trope is stolen from somewhere else, but not with any understanding of how the trope works or why it worked elsewhere. just thrust in. The silent scene where rings are exchanged, which works at like episode 8 when there's a sudden betrayal, but not 5 minutes into episode 1. Mm. The character with a special power that everyone's after, which works in like Outlaw Star, where she's the only one who can drive this spaceship, but not in this game where everyone's supposed to be brand new. The tropey main character is super powerful but loses all his powers, which is in like 75% of these isekai MMOs. Mm. The show felt like it was written by a 15-year-old who was really enthusiastic about all the other shows he'd seen and just put all his favorite things in a line.
Yeah. And again, we don't see anything about the fantasy world itself.
There is no fantasy world. There's no world building.
There is none.
It has no world consistency.
Though one of our characters is stuck in it because Asahi can't get out because she's a ghost. She's a ghost in the machine. So yes, this was surprisingly innocent.
I think that's the only positive thing I can say about it, though.
It's very melodramatic, so it led to some comedy.
But it was comedy at the show's expense. We were laughing at the show, with the show. Yeah,
yes, absolutely. Let's hear what Cricket-chan has to say. Cricket-chan?
Notice me, Mato-kun.
Oh, God.
So can you believe that this is the bear show we watched?
Absolutely I can. Like I said, I almost wanted to like Seven Senses. But the next show that we watched, this show we only could stand one episode of, and
this is going to be a hard one to talk about.
This is a bad one. This is really, really awkward. This is called The Master of Ragnarok and Blesser of Einherjar. Should I just start off with the description from Crunchyroll?
That's probably for the best.
Okay. Again, I'm reading this verbatim from the site. Yuto Suo is a boy from modern times who accidentally ended up in the warring world of Yggdrasil, in a world where various clans fight for supremacy and survival of the fittest rules supreme. Yuto manages to use his modern knowledge as a weapon, and the age of 16. Yeah, that's what I read. Managed to become a patriarch with a force of thousands. Welcome to an exhilarating battle fantasy chronicle about a young man who became a king in a parallel world and the beautiful battle maidens who swear absolute fealty to him. 2 exclamation points.
Now, there's an important word in that summary. Really important word.
At? The one that they didn't put in?
Became.
Past tense. It's past tense, Alex.
Because all the exciting things you can imagine happening in this show, where you're like, okay, he's like sucked into a new world, he has to use all his battle knowledge, and he recruits characters along the way, that's done. We're past that point. He's already king, he already has a bunch of battle maidens, he already has a worshipful public. He's already won in this historic isekai, because he says himself in his wall of exposition that he thinks this is somewhere in the past where magical tattooed women swear fealty by becoming, I can't say it,
members of his family, both children or little sisters.
Oh, fuck, it's so creepy.
There's a ceremony very akin to a wedding called the Oath of the Chalice where this happens. There's a fucking priest that fucking officiates it. So this technique in storytelling, Alex, that you are bemoaning, It's a very well-established one called in media res, in the middle of the action. Mm-hmm. That's what they were going for. Because the show starts off where protagonist-san, because I didn't learn his goddamn name, protagonist-san is commanding his troops in battle. And he uses a phalanx maneuver, and it effectively propels the attacking force.
Murdering everyone on the opposing side.
Yes. Meanwhile, some arrows fly at his head and blonde booby lady saves him from them because she's a superpower angel or whatever.
And Einherjar,
It's implied that that's what the Einherjar are, even though that's what Valkyries are.
Again, it's like in Mesopotamia, though. It looks like it's clearly in a sort of desert/tropic environment. It's nowhere near.
Very sandy, very mountainous.
In media res. I get what they would go for there, but like normally you would then flash back from that.
Like in the famed American film, Sonic the Hedgehog.
Mm-hmm.
Sonic starts off fighting robotic goons, but then he takes the time to slow down and he says, I bet you're wondering how I got in this mess.
But flashing back would flash back to a point where the main character wasn't completely beloved by all, utterly unbeatable, and surrounded by hot women who he is awkward with.
Very awkward.
It's such a narcissistic power fantasy.
Yeah.
He's such a Gary Stu. Nothing goes wrong for him.
He always makes the right moves. Things are hard, but he always perseveres through using his brains and his powers, keeping his eye on the prize, which is the girl back home, I guess. He has his cell phone still, which is a ripoff of another isekai called Trapped in Another World with My Smartphone.
Mm-hmm, yep.
So he uses that
to call this girl he has at home. I'm nearly positive it's his sister.
No, it can't be.
Oh, are you kidding? This show is such a weird sister fetish going on.
I want to believe, Alex.
Everyone calls him older brother.
Right, because he adopted them into his family.
It's extra creepy.
Oh, God, I hate it.
I didn't think there would be... This is more off-putting than panty shots. And there are no panty shots in this. There's none of that. It runs deeper.
It's so much more insidious. Let's get down to it a few times. The first shot of the series is a gross, like disturbing silhouette of a naked lady.
Yeah, her proportions are wrong.
She was drawn like, it was like a 14-year-old who had never seen boobs before.
That's certainly
drew this silhouette.
That's certainly the target audience of the show.
His army then goes to battle. It's boring in CG. It's very pathetic CG. Very just like, lifeless.
Yeah, and he wins overwhelmingly without issue.
Yes. And then we cut to our intro. And the intro tells us the backstory.
Oh, yeah. The backstory is established in like 4 seconds in the intro.
Yes.
There's a mirror. He falls into it. His sister's like, no, that's it. Backstory done.
No. He takes a selfie with himself and the divine mirror. And somehow he gets trapped in the and then he goes back in time. And then apparently the girl steals the mirror and keeps it in her bedroom because she always looks at it when she talks to him at night.
I was assuming it was the conduit for their smartphones. Like it was the only place he had signal.
Oh, maybe. But then how is he looking up phalanxes and shit on his phone during the battle?
Oh, no. Yeah, I see your point.
There was one thing about the intro I thought was interesting, though, which is there's another boy in it.
One more.
He might even be a person of color.
Which no way.
Maybe. Maybe he's just tan. We can't tell. And he has a hammer. And I think he's way cooler than Protagonist Son.
Almost certainly. Protagonist Son is obnoxious.
He's got no personality. None. Meanwhile, this guy is like fighting people off with his hammer that he's using like a sword. Because clearly they didn't know how to animate this properly.
Are we talking about the production values of this show?
We can talk about the production values.
There are none. It looks worse than Seven Senses, and that's saying something.
It had a lot of one of my biggest pet peeves, which is side mouth, where they showcase the character in profile, but they don't want to animate the lips moving and thus changing the profile. So they put a mouth to the side, like some sort of weird bivalve person. And they just talk like that. I'd rather have a show about Hammer Boy, for sure. Hammer Boy seemed like cool people.
What, you didn't like the scene where Protagonist Son goes into a room of much older men who are all his tacticians and explains to them really, really basic strategy, and they're all like, what? No way. Every single scene is about how great the protagonist is.
You know what would be really funny? If these were like cavemen. If he was leading cavemen into like a new era, I think that would be funny.
I could get behind that, but that would be a concept.
Oh, yeah. We're dealing strictly with tropes here.
There's more world building present in this one.
Yeah.
But it's already done. It's gone.
There are clans. They have leaders. And you can bond them to your patriarchy. to get alliances. It's very much a power fantasy. It's very reminiscent of old pulp stuff, like the movie series Gore, which was based on a series of novels as well. Mystery Science Theater cracked up on a few of them. There's just nothing in the way of the modern man being the manliest of men.
Yeah, no, Gore was the concept you wanted, the like modern scientist who sucked back into a Stone Age sort of Conan world.
Yeah.
And has to buff up, draw a sword, and save ladies.
He was always buff, Alex. I'm sorry to break it to you. I feel like we need to talk about the scene where the leader of the other clan is brought in before protagonist.
She's not the leader, is she?
She is. I think she's the leader. She's the leader / Einherjar.
Of the Horn Clan.
Of the Horn Clan. And she's tied up like a pig.
He basically threatens her and is like, it's hard to say. It's like, you have to join my family.
Or else I'm going to burn down your whole country.
Yeah, he threatens to burn everyone in the country alive. And then like...
which he apparently has done before.
No, like the implication after that is he was bluffing. And for some reason he's been blamed for this action.
Yeah.
But it's still an awful thing to do to someone.
Oh, it's... no, it's coercion.
And not just it's the cruelest way. Like, you have to do this or everyone you love will die.
Yes.
Terribly.
Yes.
And that's why I wrote, our main character is scum. And after he does this, she leaves and the other characters in the room are like, oh, master, you're so generous and gentle. We know you wouldn't do it. You're a good person.
What's worse is that the political incident that takes place in the last quarter of the episode where the advisors are gathered is there is an attack on the Horn Clan, which is now part of their clan. And the advisors are like, we don't want to help them. They're new. We have no allegiance to them. And Horn Clan girl is like, I will do literally anything if you will just help my people. And it's disgusting. It is so pathetic. Like, how much lower can they bring this character?
And this is why I call this a narcissistic fantasy.
Yes.
Because the show fundamentally doesn't understand how awful what it's doing is. The main character is a repulsive person. He's doing terrible things.
It doesn't matter that's the world he lives in. He's still choosing to do these things.
And he's a modern person. Like, he knows he doesn't have to do those things. Yes. It's not the culture he was raised in. He's just terrible. And the show has no idea about this. Just no clue that he's the worst.
No. He's the bestest boy.
Like, there's no buy-in to it. It's just, ugh.
I would compare him to Vash the Stampede from Trigun. Vash is a master marksman, but he has a strict I don't kill people policy. So he uses his master marksmanship in interesting non-lethal ways because he knows he's better than killing people.
In what way is that similar to protagonist?
I'm saying he's not that. He's like, I'm the best, therefore I will kill people. If he had been a non-lethal warlord, that would have been something very interesting to see in this world. It would have been perplexing and strange and, like, wouldn't have made a lot of sense. And they probably would not work over time. But it would have been a twist on it that would have made more sense.
But that would take time out of women telling him how great he is.
Yeah. Ugh. And we didn't even meet all of them. There are so many more that he's going to gather. You compared them to Pokemon.
Yeah,
it's
Pokemon with women. This show clearly aspired to a couple other show concepts.
Yes.
There's a show called Utawaretemono, which is an older anime about like a guy who wakes up. He's got a mask permanently on his face, and he has no memories. And he leads like a tiny village to military victory against an evil like Sauron sort of figure. And that works because he does so intelligently and because you see the hero's journey and the adventure as opposed to just jumping to when he's already won.
Wow, that's all in one episode, huh? So some facts about this show. The direct translation of the title is Well-Tempered High King and Valkyrie of Covenant. It's based on a light novel series written by Seiichi Takayama and illustrated by Yuki-san. Publication began around 2013 and is still going with 20 volumes in print now.
20
light novels.
Did we jump into like volume 11 or something?
I don't know.
This show?
I did not want to start reading light novels just for this show. This anime ran for 12 episodes in 2018 And for some reason, there is also a manga adaptation of the light novels. So before we get on to our dishonorable mention, Alex, which is when we always rage quit our own podcast, let's talk more about other anime viewings we've had. So clearly, Master of Ragnarok and Blesser of Einherjar is the worst show of the two we watched today. Is it the worst show we've watched in quarantine, in anime quarantine specifically?
I'm going to have to go with yes. This is a big yes because it is the worst on every single level. It's not merely the creepiest, which it is. There's no competent storytelling. The characters are boring. The animation is garbage. The soundtrack is obnoxious. The opening and ending themes were repulsive.
We couldn't sit through the ending theme.
It was so obnoxious. Just the most whiny, auto-tuned. It sounded like a Vocaloid. Then those are the entirely computer-generated singers. They're very popular in Japan.
Set to prototypes of body pillows.
Yeah.
Blech.
I find it hard to say anything positive about Master of Einherjar.
I don't think there was a single thing, except for Hammer Boy, that I liked about the show.
Yeah, but
and that, like, I'm sure Hammer Boy will be ruined. This show is going to ruin everything. If you have any hope going in, it will be dashed. There's even stuff about the show we're not even going to talk about.
No, we left out the creepiest stuff.
We left out the worst stuff.
Our no talking about Ecchi Rule, we ran close to it, but we can't go to the depths of this show.
Yeah. And if that's in episode one, it's only going to be worse and worse and worse.
But like, I've said before that Ecchi doesn't make a show bad because the whole genre is evil. The whole Ecchi is so stupid and gross and juvenile that it's judging an entire genre. I think even taking the creepy out of this show, which is most of the show, you have to take most of the show out to get the creepy, you're still left with a terrible television show.
Yeah.
On execution alone.
That ties into something I wanted to ask you, which is the intersection of all of these genres, does that make a show worse? Is this like a law of anime that the more subgenres that it fulfills, the worse the show is going to be? Because Ragnarok was harem, isekai, and ecchi-ish.
Yeah. Yeah, I see your point. I counter that good shows, especially in this day and age, tend to be a little genre-defying.
Right.
And do a very good job of mixing genres. So I don't think it's fair to say having elements of genres together makes the show worse. I think having elements of genres together so prominently, without an effort to mix them up and make new plays on them, that's what results in something bad.
Yes.
So it's not mixing genres that's bad. It's that shows that do it very poorly stand out as awful.
Interesting. Yeah, with Ragnarok Boy, all the women are fawning over him already.
No, there's no character development.
None.
They're barely one-dimensional.
And that was actually our biggest problem. When we quit, we were like, where the fuck does the show go from here? There's no story. There's no hook.
We read episode summaries going forward, included things like they have to fight over who gets to give him a sponge bath. And as well as every episode is like, they fight a war and win. Like at least 7 of the episodes include whole wars that they just win in an episode.
Yeah, that sounds great because that's how war works.
As far as I could tell from the thumbnails, he also gets back home.
At least once.
His character takes the girls with him. And then that's just like a thing that happens. I don't know. It's so flimsy.
I don't care anymore.
It's such a flimsy, pathetic excuse to be creepy.
It's just such a Frankenstein. All the stitches are so visible and like ugly and apparent. So enough about that off-putting, angering show. It's time to check in with everyone's favorite man-machine interface, Tachi the Human IMDb!
Yay!
He writes, Dear Worst Show on Earth, is it better to go to the post office to send mail, or use the outdoor Dropbox? How can I trust the history of the Dropbox without conducting a thorough stakeout?
It's got a point.
I keep waiting for Kevin Costner to arrive on horseback, and he continues to disappoint. Then again, none the usually.
Speaking of usually disappointed, it's round three of anime quarantine, and it's clear why anime was kept off the table in the early days of this podcast. But its tasteful parts carry over from show to show, and it becomes a battle of which stank is giving off more tolerable fumes. This week, it's pretty easy to guess. Seven Senses of the Reunion has an okay setup. The conscience of a girl who died years ago has been preserved in her video game avatar, and it's up to her former guild or party or teammates or whatever to return to the game and investigate. There's not a whole lot to report on episode 3. We learn our two leads swore an oath years ago to protect each other. That was the oath that we must have witnessed and had no context for.
No, that wasn't the promise that we couldn't hear that.
It could be a different promise, you're right. We don't know which characters he's referring to. Mm. But we read on. And there is a rematch against the big robo monster they fought last time they played. Three members are back in action, and I presume they will collect more teammates in future episodes. It's not the worst. I just wish it had more fun with the fact that it's in a video game. I wanted random people offering up quests to be accepted or ignored. And the foes could be more fun. This show needed some of the One Punch Man writers to create powerful antagonists to last anywhere from 8 episodes to 5.5 minutes. Meanwhile, there is Master of Ragnarok and the title that goes on for too long. A show I assumed was another harem show before learning it falls under Isekai. A word that confuses my spell check more than spelling reunion with an apostrophe. But it's kind of a harem show.
It's totally a harem show.
I watched the first 2 episodes. Episode 2 is a little sneakier. I forgot what an icky show this was, because the first half focuses on military strategy. There's some Sun Tzu quoting. A battle scene with a hero moment for Rune. Rune? Oh, Rune was the dog girl that we never talked about.
Oh, right.
Because she's a dog girl who fawns over the Master of Ragnarok.
She kind of blurred in with all the other girls who fawned over the Master of Ragnarok.
I mean, they were all visually distinct and did different things, but...
But they were visually distinct in, like, a every QR code is different sort of way.
Wow, that's a really good way to put it, yeah. Anyway, a battle scene with a hero moment for Rune, and then the battle ends. Act break. Then our main character is taking a bath with 2, then 3 girls. One of them is his new sister, Linnea, who proposes marriage. Shocked are the other girls. You can't make such an offer without scrubbing his back first. Yeah.
Oh my god.
It happened, and apparently it's worse than we even imagined. Good job. Later, there is talk of how this marriage could be good for the clans, but it doesn't matter. This is all so another female can hoist the male higher into masterful sainthood, which I think may be what the show is about. It's hard to stack this against Rosario plus Vampire. That show was more non-stop in its pervertedness. This show is made creepier by the status of characters. The worship. The kinda, sorta, not, but also, yeah, incest aspect. Since I've watched 2 episodes of both, I'll say they're tied for the worst anime I've sat through. And just like soccer, or football, depending on where you're listening from, we can wrap things up here without ever breaking the tie. Transmitted through time via solar-powered smartphone. Tachi, the human IMDb.
Wow, he sounds broken.
Yeah.
Defeated.
I can't say I blame him.
No, it's absolutely the correct feeling.
The only one of us who didn't collapse under the horrible weight of this show was Cricket-chan.
She's so reliable. Always chirping on.
Yeah, she just won't fucking stuck.
Speaking of sounds I don't want to hear. I believe we have a dishonorable mention.
Do we ever? No.
Okay, give me a minute.
Are you ready?
Okay. Gotta do some exercises.
While you do that, let me explain what this is to our audience. The Dishonorable Mention is a show in this genre that we thought sounded so awful that we refused to watch it. But we do want to talk about it and yell about it because that's sort of the nature of this podcast. Are you ready, Alex, to hear about The Dishonorable Mention?
All right, I'm in my happy place. You can't break me out of my happy place. Let's do this.
All right. The anime's title is Conception. Came out in 2019. It's based on a video game of the same name with the added bonus of the subtitle, Please Give Birth to My Child.
Oh, my happy place is burning.
Protagonist-san is sucked into another world called Granvania with his childhood friend, or maybe his cousin? I think they're cousins.
Oh, it's worse.
Cousin-chan is pregnant.
What?
And even though it's definitely protagonist-chan's, there's no father?
But... happy place, happy place, happy place, happy place.
So anyway, the portal opens, they both get pulled into the fantasy world. In order to get out, they need to save it, because it's full of things called impurities.
Of course.
And the only way to fight the impurities is for protagonist-san to meet the 12 star maidens.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
He needs to build a bond of intimacy with them so that they can perform the love ritual in order to create star children. Cousin Chan is one of the star maidens.
I am at a loss for words.
I might be able to offer you the rope of hope right now, because what if I told you that this show contained absolutely no sex whatsoever?
I wouldn't be surprised. It's anime.
Really?
No, it's just the implication.
There's also a floating red panda mascot who talks about sex all the time.
A-plus cinema.
And this concept almost makes sense in the game perspective, because if you combine the dating sim aspect with the battle tactics thing...
Yeah, that's Persona.
Yeah, you build at the intimacy level that makes the star children that you create stronger, and then you can send them to go fight the baddies.
Yeah, but does it need to have a creepy incest theme?
No.
Gotta have that incest to keep things pure.
Oh, God. Anyway, I did manage to somehow see the very finale of this show. I do have to tell you about this. Protagonist-san goes home. Literally every woman he's ever met in the new world comes with him. the red panda mascot turns into a girl. And then he marries all of them at the same time.
At least it went all in. Like, at least I can say, from the sounds of it, this show at least commits.
So that's the Dishonorable Mention. I'm glad we didn't watch it.
What do we have to look forward to next quarantine?
Ah, yes. Well, next week we have a regular installment of The Worst Show on Earth, where we're going to delve further into the buddy cop sitcom Holmes and Yo-Yo. And you must remember, Alex, Yo-Yo is a secret robot.
How could I forget?
Yes. But the following week, we'll be back in anime quarantine. And you know what? It's time to... duel!
Is it card battles?
That's right! We're going to draw up some card battle shows to see which one is the worst.
Oh, that's exciting.
And if you have any suggestions for card battle, please let us know. If you have a suggestion for a theme for anime quarantine, or if you think there's a particular show we'd enjoy tearing apart or anything like that, you can email us at worstshowonearth@gmail.com. Again, worstshowonearth@gmail.com. We found our way back for this week. If you've enjoyed us abusing our brains with bad cartoons, subscribe to the podcast and leave a review.
And if you want to hear more of us, you can catch us many Sundays on the Demi Dozen, a game of Scion 2nd Edition, that's a tabletop role-playing game, on the Scabby Rooster Twitch channel. We generally go live at about 4 p.m.
Pacific time. And until next time, enjoy what you watch, no matter how creepy it is.
Don't do that.